This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Dashran Johan. There's been plenty of speculation recently surrounding the leadership of Pakatan Harapan. Many say that the sun is setting on Anwar Ibrahim and that the opposition coalition needs a new general to lead them into the battlefield. On today's show, I'll be speaking via Skype to James Chai, a frequent commenter on Malaysian politics. He's also the head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. And we're going to try and understand the politicking in Pakatan Harapan that led us to this juncture and who could potentially carry on the torch from the man who's been leading the Reformasi movement for more than 20 years. Welcome to the show, James. How are you doing?
Hi, Dashran. Good to be here. I'm good.
There's been plenty of news recently surrounding the possibility of new leadership at Pakatan Harapan. This, of course, comes at the heels of a number of political plays that failed to achieve the desired result and inspire an increasingly frustrated voter base. I'm referring to Anwar Ibrahim's announcement before the Sabah state elections that he has the numbers to form the government, as well as his instructions to fellow opposition MPs to stand down and not vote against Budget 2021 at the policy stage. But James, Pakatan Harapan's problems started way before the past few months, haven't they?
I think when we talk about Pakatan Harapan's problems, it could be seen in two ways. One is the eventual fall of the Pakatan Harapan government. So that allows us to probe the question of what went wrong there. And the second level of considering this problem is that why the strongest ever opposition bloc that we have currently is unable to muster enough support to take back what is theirs in government. So if we see both of those as being Pakatan Harapan's main problems, then we have to probe back to what happened since they have acquired power in May 2018. My analysis is that the newness of Pakatan Harapan to power has created environments in which not only made them very vulnerable, but also made them unpopular over time. So bearing in mind, Pakatan Harapan's popularity level around May 2018 was extremely high, but right. This has plummeted it significantly over the months for a few reasons. One, but they all stem from the same root of the problem, which is being very new to power. Being new to power also means that they are very submissive to the person who's been in power before. And in this particular case, it was Tun Dr. Mahathir. That means Pakatan Harapan's ministers have always subjugated their decisions to Mahathir. A lot of them admitting that they need, this need to wait and consult Mahathir before they make any major decisions. So this is quite a major setback to the coalition. The other thing is that being submissive to Mahathir also means that it has created a huge imbalance of power within the coalition quite early on. This is because Bersatu was the smallest party, yet it holds not only the highest executive powers, but also the highest percentage of people from a single party to hold ministers as well as deputy minister positions. But the second analysis from this is to also consider the fact that because a lot of the Pakatan Harapan members who gained power and became government were new to power, that also means that this is the first time they've ever tasted what privilege and the wealth of the position can bring to them. Yeah. So being humans themselves, they have sorted to a different kind of value system where they are more pragmatic rather than more idealistic. And their priority then becomes, what do I have to do to protect my position so that I can still enjoy it in the future? That also necessarily means that they are more likely to take safer bets in the decisions they are making, less bold, less courageous. And a lot of the practices and policies were quite similar to the enemy that they once fought, which is Barisan Nasional. Now, all of this have an impact not only in the impressions that are that they have at the elite level, which is like, oh, they're not that not that different from their predecessors. But on ground level, people were also becoming more anxious to know that, oh, reforms were not that readily thought through, or they were not that easily pushed through as well. So a lot of them have grown disappointment as well as disenchantment against the Pakatan Harapan government. So if you crumble at the very top and you don't have support at the foundational level by the grassroots and supporters, that's where the problem comes in. And that's why when Perikatan Nasional took power, it was by a coup d'etat, because there was a vulnerability at the top that allows them to strike.
Right. And how much of Pakatan Harapan's vulnerabilities would you credit to the infighting between Mahathir and Anwar that has been, frankly, going on for years, decades even?
I think a lot of it is a major part of why Pakatan Harapan is so vulnerable, not only as a coalition, which means we can say as a party politics level, but also vulnerable at a government level. So at the very start, there was no written agreement that Mahathir would hand over power to Anwar after 2 years. Now, this incredible sense of uncertainty and vagueness of what's going to happen had created a lot where the infighting has happened. Now, although right. there were a lot of uncertainty on the ground of knowing when the handover is going to happen, it didn't help matters that Mahathir at the top has constantly teased out different versions of the story. So sometimes he would say 1.5 years, sometimes he'd say 2 years, then after APEC, and then maybe after 3 years. So the constant shifting of the goalposts were obviously irate a lot of the PKR members, who is the largest bloc in Pakatan Harapan at that time. So if we combine this huge reluctance of Mahathir to hand over, and a lot of Bersatu sources have now validated that Mahathir was indeed very reluctant, not only due to history, but also due to the fact that he doesn't think that Anwar is a better prime minister than he is. Mm-hmm. But if we combine this one to this highly amenable, highly reconciliatory tone that Anwar takes, fully trusting of Mahathir to hand over to him, and some would call this slightly misguided, this created even more tension on the ground, because the lack of honesty and transparency at the top has created an environment whereby behind the scenes, a lot of people were doing something else. So Mahathir is telling one version of the story. Anwar is being extremely accepting of whatever Mahathir gives to him. But both of them have different dissatisfaction behind the scenes. And this allows things to really heat up without things coming to the surface. So this not only angered and created a lot of resentment at the grassroots level, but it also created the perfect recipe for the grandest coup d'etat when Pakatan Harapan eventually fell. Amanah DAP's relationship with PKR has also soured as a result of this infighting between Mahathir and Anwar, where both of them, Amanah and DAP, were forced to actually pick a side at different moments. So they're either they have to pick either they want to side with Mahathir to say that it's okay to hand over only when the government is stable on a vague timeline, or they have to put their friendship with Anwar over the years as priority. So this constant need for them to switch between Mahathir and Anwar has obviously soured relationships between them and PKR members as well as PKR party leaders. All of this stem from the same point of this fundamental distrust that Mahathir and Anwar has towards each other.
So let's talk about Anwar Ibrahim's announcement a few months back that he has the numbers to form the new government. The words he used, I believe, were strong, convincing, formidable majority. As we all know, nothing actually came of that. In fact, I think it spawned so many memes. People started to poke fun of it. How has that announcement impacted Anwar Ibrahim's popularity and also his standing in Pakatan Harapan?
Now, what Anwar's public proclamation have done was that not only was it a tactical blunder, but it has invited two unique problems to Pakatan Harapan presently. One is this public humiliation that follows. So it was a huge risk for him to have publicly proclaimed that he had the numbers before actually confirming it. This has resulted in DAP and Amanah being extremely confused, because when the press had approached DAP and Amanah, they were not really acquainted with this fact that they had enough support to take back power.
Exactly.
And this invited a lot of humiliation that, of course, they felt was uncalled for, and they did not have to suffer. So this assumed assistance by DAP and Amanah also, to a certain extent, is, of course, disheartening for DAP and Amanah, because they felt like they are not always assumed that they would support them upon being called. So it didn't help matters that Mahathir's Pejuang and Warisan not only did not believe Anwar's claim, but they also took the opportunity to ridicule him, to say that he'd done that many times before and nobody actually believed him. So all of that obviously not only harmed the credibility of Anwar, but it also harmed the credibility of the Pakatan Harapan coalition as a whole. It felt like they were disorganized, chaotic, and more often than not, they could not speak the same mind. But the second unique problem that isn't really talked about in the mainstream space is how Anwar had invited this moral dilemma relating to whether we want to work with UMNO or not. The only way that he has a strong, formidable and convincing majority, all of them essentially is a display of strength, is when it puts Pakatan Harapan at a really weird limbo. Because in order to form the majority, you need to have some support from the UMNO people. And so far, people like Najib and Zahid have indicated that they were open to working with Anwar and making him prime minister. So what that means is that it suddenly pushed Pakatan Harapan out of this ideological spectrum of being very principled as a party and being anti-corruption freedom fighters, because now they are relegated to this highly pragmatic spectrum, very similar to what you see of Perikatan Nasional or Barisan Nasional. So right. This is a unique problem that is replicated in Perak, where there was Zahid Hamidi who claims that he's open to working with other parties if PAS and Bersatu did not want to pull their strength. And DAP, obviously, DAP Perak has proclaimed that they are open to working with UMNO as well. So all of this were not only problems relating to failing to follow through with your words of actually forming a government, but they also invited a lot of moral dilemmas that shifted how people perceive Pakatan Harapan. Because now pragmatism and political convenience seems to be more important than what they have proclaimed in the past, which is more principle-based, more based on ideals. All of that seems to be negotiable now.
I'm wondering if the decision to ask the opposition MPs, his own teammates, to stand down during the policy stage of the budget 2021 vote rubbed people within Pakatan Harapan the wrong way, particularly members of DAP, Amanah and Warisan. I mean, we've already in recent weeks seen Warisan MPs boycott the subsequent budget sittings in protest against Anwar Ibrahim.
My personal view is that I think component parties of Pakatan Harapan were disappointed not because they did not get to vote.
Okay.
They were disappointed because that is a further proof that Anwar doesn't have the numbers. Now, for the longest time, DAP and Amanah, after having been in government with Mahathir before, understands the powerful position of being as part of government compared to opposition. Like, they've suffered enough, in other words. Right? So most of them still actually believe that it is quite important to get back to power. And that's for, therefore, they always cling on to this notion that if Anwar has power, they would join them. They would join Anwar. However, they were also open to the idea of another alternative of either maybe Shafi Abdal assuming the position, If he has enough numbers, then they may be open to considering to switch as well. And the reason why they have started considering alternatives, and before 2020, DAP and Amanah have always stuck on this notion that it is Anwar or no one else, right? Yep. Only when we don't have a choice do we go somewhere else. Right. But it's only recently that they've started opening up that possibility more and more because they've seen instances where Anwar claims that he could deliver the numbers, but eventually failing to do that. And the budget vote was the best evidence and also the best chance to prove that the present Muhyiddin government is weak and this wasn't followed through. Yeah, so they were more irate because of that. However, most of the DAP and Amanah MPs eventually still stuck through with Anwar during this period because they still do not have a better option. But I think the budget block voting episode has at least proven to Amanah and DAP that it was valid for them and it was probably something to be encouraged now to seek alternatives other than Anwar. Of course, it is dangerous for themselves as well to take such a move. But I think that would be one of the upshots from what happened in Parliament recently.
All right. For now, we do need to go for a very quick commercial break. I'm speaking with James Chai, frequent commentator of Malaysian politics and head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. We'll be back with more Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Dashran Johan, and I'm joined by James Chai, frequent commentator of Malaysian politics and head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. And we are discussing if there's a need for new leadership at Pakatan Harapan. James, before the break, we talked about the various instances involving Anwar Ibrahim that have sort of led to the mess that Pakatan Harapan is in right now. So I guess the next big question is, should Anwar step down as the leader of Pakatan Harapan?
Now, the first time that we hear about Anwar stepping down as a Pakatan Harapan leader was when Shafie Abdal from Warisan have teased this idea that the opposition coalition needs a change of leadership. And I think this is largely because component parties like DAP and Amanah are indeed looking for an alternative in terms of who leads them. And that was the starting point when Anwar had failed to prove that he had a strong, convincing, formidable majority. At the same time, he prevented people from opposition from voting at the budget stage, as well as not proving that he has enough numbers even at the committee stage of the debates. I think the consideration for Pakatan is not whether Anwar should resign, but whether who can present a new vision of what they want in G15. Now, I'm really off probably the contrarian view. I don't think the urgency is about finding a leader who can get you the numbers that's high enough so that you can return to power. Honestly think that that is, once again, a short-term, temporary solution to what is a long-term, festered problem. So the challenge is quite difficult because a lot of Pakatan Harapan members, of course, would always retreat to two things. One is whoever can give us the shortest route back to power. In other words, they would be willing to back, let's say, Shafie Abdal, if he can prove to have the power of Kudi, for example. And second of all, it is so tempting for them to retreat to what's comfortable, which is the arrangement between a few big parties, even though they don't get along together, and just have a gloss over principles and ideals as well as policy positions, because in the end, the easiest fight for them to have is anti-corruption fight. It is almost a coalition in a negative sense rather than a positive sense. So the challenge for them is really to find whether they are willing to, let's say, break whatever that didn't work in the past, or do they retreat back to what's comfortable and try to use the same formula in G15 again. The long and short of it is that I think that as long as we do not have a better alternative, the call for asking Anwar to resign is almost immaterial, because you also don't want to create a political vacuum. So what I'm more interested in is whether Pakatan Harapan would actually take time to decide what is the vision that, you know, is definitely more difficult to put up with, but has the highest chance of them winning in GE15, rather than anyone who can get them back to power, and then they, you know, they're put into another political quagmire of finding it hard to explain to the voters as to why they're willing to compromise with people that they've fought against in the past.
James, Tun M is someone who has been very critical of Anwar for many years. He's even accused Anwar of being someone who's power-hungry and desperate to be prime minister. Do you think Anwar is desperate, particularly since the last couple of years has been a case of so near yet so far for the veteran politician?
Now, it is undeniable that on a personal level, Anwar is quite single-minded in finishing the task of becoming prime minister. His ascendancy, his quick ascendancy in UMNO, when in 1998, of him assuming deputy prime minister position, had put him into a very, very close position, given how popular he is in the party, as well as the grassroots level, so close to power and not being able to acquire it. So to a certain extent, there was some sense of poetic justice that he has to pursue after being unjustly convicted. Now he has to go out there and take what is supposedly his. I think right. There will be some elements of a personal motivation like that. But I honestly think that the larger reason as to why Anwar always considers the matter of numbers is because of the environment that was created after he came out of prison. So he is still the first ever prime minister in waiting. There is nothing, there's no title like that in the history of Malaysia before. Now, that put him into quite a unique position where he built a circle of expectation and anticipation. That means that the networks around him, he has his own policy team, he has a grassroots expectation, business connections, wider political community embracing him and so on. So that has pushed forward a certain momentum that he has to assume power, because so many people are sort of counting on it.
Some diehard supporters of Anwar Ibrahim might say that while he's made a couple of huge errors that we cannot ignore, Anwar should still be the leader of the opposition because, like you said, it's about what he has done for the past 20 years. It's also poetic justice. So what do you think? Do you think that he should still be the one to lead them into GE15? Sorry.
I understand the struggles that Anwar had to go through. Now, his biggest contribution and his most lasting legacy has actually already materialized. It doesn't only materialize when he becomes prime minister. That's at least my view, which is the largest and probably the most effective political movements ever created in the history of Malaysia, Reformasi, has produced many well-meaning reformists, not only within PKR, but across all of the political parties in the country. They were inspired by this sense that you have to right what has been wrong and institutions must be changed. And there's this growing sense of justice that hasn't really fully materialized in terms of a value-based system that people can hold on to in their pursuit of trying to assume political positions for the betterment of the country. I think that is his most lasting legacy. And therefore, there is some more diehard, more traditional supporters of Anwar who cannot detach the struggle and Anwar altogether. Now, more sober reformists and well-meaning reformists would understand that the struggle has Anwar as part of it, but the struggle is not Anwar.
Do you think Anwar Ibrahim understands this?
Of course not, because like he definitely understands. I mean, every politician have a certain amount of pride in who they are. They would believe that their own judgments, after having gone through a lot, especially with bulk of experience, that they are able to make decisions better. And like what I said before, the circumstances and the environment that continues to feed into this notion that he is the best person for the job has, of course, affected him in his decisions, and which culminated in him proclaiming that he has the majority, which necessarily pushed him to an even more desperate position because now he has to prove that he has a majority, which is sort of like a last-ditch attempt. Because many people are counting on this opportunity to finally discount him from the equation, whereas his refusal against that can only be effective if he actually follows through with his strong, formidable, and convincing majority claim. So I think he definitely understands that the struggle is important. I wouldn't discount that. But he also, to a certain extent, would think that he has the best leverage and talents to pull it off.
And who do you think should be the new leader of Pakatan Harapan? In a speech recently, as you brought up earlier, Shafi Abdal talked about the need for a fresh leader to unite the opposition. And he implied that he should be the person. James, I think you might agree with me that Malaysia perhaps could use an East Malaysian Prime Minister. But is Shafi Abdal that person?
Now, I am in a strange position recently because I am starting to speak to more people who are like twice or three times my age. And for the very first time, which is very unfamiliar to me, that they felt like old people like them should not be part of the picture anymore. So there is at least this sentiment among people who, let's say, who are above 50, who felt like politicians of their generation have done enough chaos, enough trouble to the system, that you owe it to the young people to let them try their hand at it. Now, I do believe that it is important that we have a clean slate, that the leader must necessarily be clean and could not have any baggages of the past. Now, I am not too acquainted with Shafi Abdal, but I do understand to a certain extent that he has been part of the system before, and therefore he may carry certain baggages together with. What we do need is a fresh air who is able to have higher imaginations of what's possible, having courage to speak to the truth and willing to take risks of starting the whole thing over again rather than doing what's convenient. I understand that there are still very good-hearted, well-meaning politicians in the country who are clean, not involved in any corruption scandal, who are not people who has too much ties with the existing structure. So to a certain extent, that person has to be an outsider. But more importantly, this person cannot be tempted by power. What I mean by this is that to a certain extent, this person must have something to fall back on should his efforts of gaining or of leading the coalition fails. In other words, this person has to be relatively comfortable in losing because a lot of what opposition is wrong in the opposition coalition now is that it is very likely to fall back into this vicious cycle of pursuing power for pragmatic reasons. Right. And therefore, it is one important criteria for this new leader to have. I have seen leaders like that in the opposition, but of course, they were not given any opportunity. So a lot of the arguments have to end quite early on because our existing political system actually doesn't open up spaces for them. However, there's one caveat. Understanding that leaders with no baggage are important to have, I also think that to a certain extent, this leader must have some sort of experience working within the political system as well as outside the political system. So it must be that kind of criteria. And the reason for that is because I think the country would be better off with a person who have courage to follow through. And being maybe too young may not be suitable to qualify you as a leader. So you need to be of, let's say, having enough experience, like 10, 20 experience in the field to be able to deliver on the promises that will be tough Because chances are, if you were to lead Pakatan Harapan or any opposition coalition, you probably have to start all over again.
I'm listening to you describe this politician. The name that comes to my mind is YB Nurul Izzah. She is someone who's clean. She doesn't come from the generation of, you know, the Tun Ams and the Anwars and the Muhyiddins, but she's also not inexperienced. She's been part of the system. I think Malaysia is ready for a woman prime minister. Nurul Izzah is someone who seems to be uninterested in the politicking side of politics. She doesn't seem to be interested in the pursuit of power. She's someone who's focused on the work. She has progressive ideas. She believes in data-driven policymaking. Mm-hmm. What do you think of Nurul Izzah as the leader of Pakatan Harapan?
I definitely think that a leader of Nurul Izzah's mold is what the country needs more of. The thing that I could attribute most to Nurul Izzah is her conviction in what she believes in. She is willing to sacrifice a lot of things. She has been doing that since she was 18 years old for a cause that's larger than herself. And when she felt like the existing environment doesn't favor that, she has been never afraid to speak up her mind, even if that comes at the expense of her own political capital inside the coalition or her own party. Someone who is intelligent, someone who has compassion for the common people, and more importantly, having imagination of what's possible in the country. Now, of course, it takes also a person like Nurul Izzah who is inspirational enough that people could identify with positively, but at the same time, having that fire inside of her that is very similar to what she had when she was 18 or 20, in her 20s, to still move a younger generation who feels like following her would not be a bad idea. So I definitely think that a leader of her mold, a well-meaning reformist, a good-hearted, who really means to do better for the country, is what the a country in our state needs more of. And although she is an MP now who is part of Pakatan Harapan, she has been a relative outsider, as in she hasn't been part of the previous Pakatan Harapan government. At the same time, she tried to distance herself from decisions that she does not agree with. I think that has served her well to not be embroiled at the heat of what political infighting is right now, and sort of define her own course and stay true to it. So when the time comes, she'll be more than ready to take it up.
But if not Nurul Izzah or Shafi Abdal, who do you think could turn the ship around for Pakatan Harapan? Who does Pakatan Harapan need to not only unite all component parties of the coalition, but also really inspire the voter base to come out and vote for the party?
It's very hard to answer. Here's the reality of what determines an opposition leader.
All right.
It is very much an elite sport, as in the people at the elite level, the older political leaders who are in the Supreme Council or any, the highest Supreme Council or any of this coalition, must have the courage to take a chance on someone who is not of their mold. Mm-hmm. So even for them to take a chance on a person like Nurul Izzah is very unlikely, because they still think that they are the ones who are able to shoulder the burden better. So a lot of who we consider to be a likely candidate is of course good for us to consider from the outside, but that person who we select must also have, to a certain extent, the confidence of the elite level within the opposition coalition or the opposition parties. So that is a prime consideration to consider likely candidates. And that's why Nurul Izzah, although is definitely favoured by a lot of people, would still have to wait for some of the people who hold the levers of power within the coalition to open the door. If not, she would have to strike it out on her own, which does take a lot of courage and a lot of organizing effort to make happen. So whoever that opposition leader is, either has to have the confidence of the elites currently so that they take a chance of on this person, or that person has to strike it out on his or her own. So if the latter, it means that there is immense courage and it must be an immense risk taker. Right. And they must have this unique ability of making things happen. So these are the people who would pursue something towards the end, very hardworking, very intelligent, that that followers will just pile up whenever, wherever this person goes. So we are looking at that kind of unique combination because as we see, a lot of new parties propping up in the past year have not been successful because it is incredibly difficult. It is not right. enough to get online support from people liking your posts, or it's not enough for you to just have press statements or appear in many places. It requires for you to do the hard work on the ground. It requires a person to have existing networks that they can expand quickly. It requires them to do quite a lot of cross-country roadshows to make sure that they sign on new people on board. It's an incredibly difficult task. And therefore, a person who has the tenacity to deliver that would normally be the answer to the problem.
Well, if Anwar Ibrahim does decide to step down as the opposition leader, let's hope that whoever takes his place is someone that cares less about the pursuit of power and more about the people. Thank you so much for joining me today, James.
Thank you for having me, Dasher.
That was James Chai, a frequent commenter on Malaysian politics and the head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. And we were having a conversation on why Pakatan Harapan may need a new leader and who that person should be. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or even subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search BFM, Live and Learn. Once again, I'm Dasran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.